Do you like horror movies? Do you like cocktails? Do you like cocktails while you watch horror movies?
Oh boy, do we have a surprise for you. Cocktails from the Crypt is finally here. You can get a copy of our new recipe book, 60 Terrifying Concoctions, inspired by your favorite horror movies, right now, wherever books are sold.
Learn how to make the Drag Mai Tai to Hell, the Negroni Nomicon.
Surprise your friends with a Jason X-inspired slushie.
Get sloshed drinking a Texas Chainsaw Margarita, or six.
And why not blow your brains at the back of your head with the Killbot Kamikaze? Thank you. Have a nice day.
You can learn how to drink. You can learn how to make these drinks and more in Cocktails from the Crypt, available wherever books are sold, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, this infomercial bit has been really fun, but seriously, one, thank you so much to everybody who has pre-ordered a copy of Cocktails from the Crypt. And if you are looking for a gift for the horror person in your life and you have no idea what else to get them, Cocktails from the Crypt is here to help them punch up every Friday movie night and turn it into a graveyard smash.
Plus, the cover's embossed and it looks great on your coffee table.
No, oh, Kim's still stuck in infomercial land, guys. I'm sorry. I think she's gone forever.
It's purple.
You can get Cocktails from the Crypt right now, wherever books are sold. Or you can head over to nofspodcast.com/go. There's links for everything.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome back to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed.
Season X.
Season X.
Or 10, or whatever we're calling this.
I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
And yes, this season on Nightmare on Film Street, we're trying things a little bit different. Rather than putting together double features, the theme spans the entire season. And it's a fucking secret.
It's a secret.
You gotta guess what it is. And if you can guess what the secret theme is based on the movies that we're talking about, you're gonna win yourself a cool little prize pack. There's some more info for that in the episode description. And we're also gonna talk about it again at the end of the episode.
I love secret theme. That's so us.
And this week's movie, another clue to what the theme is Tarsem Singh's The Cell.
From 2000.
Yeah, never. Oh, man. Very few movies as 2000 as The Cell.
Yeah, so we definitely covered this on Nightmare on Film Street in the early days.
Yeah, if it was up to me, we'd be talking about this movie every 2 years.
I was just about to say that.
Like, goddamn.
And not enough.
Not at all. Man, I love this movie. And also, I think if you're a fan, a newfound fan of Bollywood movies, like if you got obsessed with RRR, you gotta go back and revisit The Cell. I also was a little late to this. I rented this movie when I had, like, the flu. Like, my parents were like, what do you want us to pick up from the video store? And one of the movies was The Cell.
Now, was this on the wall or was this in the horror section? Like, how, like, had it been at the movie store for a bit or was it still we have 36 copies, not we've reduced down to two or one?
There's always a chance that they picked it up for themselves while getting stuff for me.
Because that's how I saw it. I saw it the exact same way. It was a rental, but I think I was too young for it, but I still saw it.
Yeah,
my parents rented it from themselves.
Yep.
I remember coming in for the horse scene and being like, what the fuck is this? And they were like, what the fuck is this? And then the next day when they were at work, I was like, yo, I'm going to watch this before they have to return it. And
hell
they
yeah.
did.
Way to go. Yeah, I was going to say, like, I was late to this because you got me to revisit it. Fell in love with it.
You don't fuck with The Cell?
Yeah, you were onto this movie from day one.
Because it's weird.
Oh, man, is it weird.
In the funnest of ways. What I love so much about The Cell, and I feel that, like, a renewed sense of it every single time we watch it, is that it makes things that aren't linear or necessarily narrative-based tangible for a commercial film audience.
Like, you're tricking people into watching an art house movie.
Yeah, like, it's a David Lynch film. David Lynch's weirdest film packaged in a crime thriller.
Hell yeah.
And as somebody who normally struggles with non-linear film, yes, but is also a very visual person who appreciates art.
Yeah.
And like paintings and 2D, but not cinema. I loved the merging of the two because for me, storytelling is king when it comes to film.
Yes.
But the visuals are also just phenomenal. It's a hard balance to straddle the two where you're like, I'm making an art house film, but I'm also telling a serial killer story about one of the coolest, most original serial killers ever.
Yeah, it could just as easily be a story about exploring any comatose person's brain. Like, it would probably look just as weird and maybe not as fucked up. Like, maybe the memories wouldn't be as bad. But yeah, it's a fantastical journey through the one mind you wouldn't want to go into, right? Like, if you got John Doe from Seven and you're like, oh, we gotta go into his brain, like, you wouldn't want to do it. You absolutely wouldn't.
Yo, John Doe though is real unoriginal. Like, he's got to use the seven deadly sins. Like, oh, we're in another quadrant.
I mean, that's one of the best parts about the John Doe character is at the end of it, you're like, you're kind of fucking pathetic. Like, you're just a nobody.
Yeah, but isn't that the kind of the reveal of all serial killers? You're just like, you're yeah, so greasy.
Well, that's because you can't really make, unless you're Bill Lustig, you can't really make a serial killer movie and be like, yeah, but isn't he a great guy? Like, isn't he kind of cool?
Did you say except for Bill Lustig?
I mean, have you seen Maniac? Okay, the ending sort of like puts the nail in the coffin as far as what we're supposed to think of that guy.
I don't think I'm on side with that guy, John.
No, you're not supposed to be. And one thing I'll say that sets The Cell apart from something like Seven is that there is a mystique of the killer in those serial killer movies, like Long Legs as well, right? Where you're like, ooh, what's up with them? I bet they're so complicated. I bet they're so weird. And like, ultimately,
he's
the characters
so tortured.
Yeah, the characters are like a little boring, but like the more time you spend with Vincent D'Onofrio's character in this movie, the more interesting he becomes.
Yeah, like he starts out being the least interesting version, where it's just like, oh, it's just a serial killer.
Yeah, it's just
oh,
fucking
of course
guy.
He's masturbating.
Of course he's got a bunch of hooks in his body and suspends himself in chains over the corpses.
Are we doing ratings before we get into it, or are we good?
I mean, if you're curious about ratings, I can give them to
I
you.
I am curious.
They're not good.
That's stupid.
It hurts. And some of them are recent.
Pass. And
they're like, the critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes is 45. The audience rating is 57. And we should say that
this is wrong.
It is very wrong. Also, like, Letterboxd is 3.2 out of 5. Letterboxd fucks with art a little bit more. Now, Arrow Video just put out a new box set of the movie, like a 4K remaster. It looks gorgeous. We got a review copy of it. Nobody's paying me to say this, but like, it's a visually stunning movie, and surprise, surprise, when they upscale it to 4K, it looks good.
Yeah, the only thing that doesn't look better, surprise, surprise, is that one CGI cape. We all know which one.
I like the CGI cape.
I like it. But I'm just saying, we all know it.
Okay, so I say that to say this, that when you look the movie up on Google, they do show you ratings for Arrow Video.
I think
Video.
Like, they do show you the CGI cape.
Unfortunately, the ratings on Arrow Video are 1 out of 5, which fucking sucks.
What is wrong with them?
They put out so... Well, that's not Arrow. Those are the...
I meant them as in them. Okay, so you were talking about Vincent D'Onofrio as a serial killer, comparing him to other serial killers like the one from Seven and more recently Long Legs.
Yeah.
And that he's fucking cooler?
Yeah.
Are we gonna say that?
Okay, why cooler? Is it because in his mind he lives in a Bollywood movie?
It's because he's got a dream state.
He's totally fucked up. He is a very interesting character. Like, there are bits of him are unique to him. He's got his own little quirks, and, you know, things that make him a person rather than just this embodiment of evil. You know, like we explore where he comes from in the movie. Like he is a...
He gets back to basics, serial killers and their kinks.
Yeah, you know, and because...
Like we know what he likes.
We know right away what he likes. And what he likes to do is slowly drown women, bleach them in a tub that he's hollowed out in his basement, and then jerk off on their corpses while hanging from hooks that go through
his... Because it feels like water.
They make that conclusion, they jump to that conclusion so quick.
Weightlessness, you fuck!
So, I mean, I don't think... Well, first off, Vince Vaughn, the cop who's hunting Vincent D'Onofrio, shows up at Jennifer Lopez's work facility. She's the psychiatrist who's been, you know, using...
Child psychologist.
Who's been using this experimental technology where she can enter the mind of patients in comas, and then he immediately shows them a snuff film that he's filmed, right? Like, here's...
He brings it to the office. Yeah. He's like, yo, look at this dead girl.
What a pitch meeting.
You like, want to see her final 30 seconds?
Where she's like crying out for her dad and stuff? Like, why did they play that?
I guess they wanted to be convincing. They were.
Yeah, I would ask them to turn that off for sure.
Did they have the footage of the current... woman? Like, was it there a live feed at any point?
No, there's no live feed. He just picks up the tapes afterward. Mm. We, you know,
yeah, because he is a coward. He is a mega coward.
So these are all the great little touches about this guy, right? Because he shows up to...
This is our introduction to him. Like, we see him drive up in the middle of the desert to this, like, worn down building in one single silo. It's beautiful. We're not in the dreamland yet, and we're already
it's
like,
his kill shack. It's beautiful.
Widescreen.
I mean, yeah, like they do some clever work of shooting like the sand dunes in India at the beginning of the movie, or in Egypt. And then we show like the landscape of Los Angeles and how it's similar, and it sort of like dovetails into where we are in the movie. And it all looks incredible. But when he goes into like his little kill shack, he's clearly
kill
there.
Shack. Kill Shack Baby.
It's a Kill Shack Baby. I can't believe you made me do this. So Vincent D'Onofrio shows up. Girl's dead. But it's like she's very, very, very recently dead. Like he is clearly trying to time this out so he is there the moment after they die.
Yeah, like he could do that 23-ounce weight test.
Yeah. And
is it 23 ounces?
I think it's 21 ounce, 21 grams.
Sorry, whatever.
And weird that we know that. If you like funky science.
Look it up. It's the weight of the soul.
It's the weight of the soul. I remember, okay, this is a small detour here. I do remember them discovering that and realizing that, okay, people die and then they lose 21 grams.
Do you think it's just a corpse fart?
So they tested that by putting... By essentially putting people in scientific...
Did they cork it?
Yeah, they put people in, like, scientific Ziploc bags. Like, gigantic Ziploc bags.
To keep the fart in?
To keep the fart in. So the weight would be
the
same.
None of these souls are getting out.
And it still worked. They still lost 21 grams. But there was a weird wrinkle in that where they did some sort of test. They did it with animals. And then they also did it with, like, some sort of sheep. And they found that the sheep, like, for some fucking reason, weighed more.
The sheep are really the apex predator.
they couldn't figure it out. Anyway, if you like, you know, armchair science, look that kind of stuff up. It's a great book called Elephants on Acid. It's just about like weird science tests and experiments that have been done, you know, over the decades.
Didn't that guy sew like a dog's head on? Or no, he didn't. He like cut a dog's head off its body and keep just the head alive.
Yeah, there's that. There was also fusing a dog's head to another dog.
I call it a pigeon rat.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Fucking science.
Which brought us to this and brought us to that. Vincent D'Onofrio is a coward.
Drowning
okay,
girls.
Back.
Yeah.
So he shows up just as they're dead. They are so freshly dead that the body's twitching and it freaks him out.
It's doing like the dead fish flop.
Yeah, and he like darts and hides.
Because he can't watch it.
Also, you know, a great little detail here has to like... try and tuck his boner away. Like he's already hard coming in seeing this dead corpse. This is a fun movie to talk about. Why did we do this? Yeah, he's a coward, but he watches the tapes of these girls dying and calling out for help while he's cleaning their bodies and while he's jerking off onto them. It's very strange. But anyway, and we learn that he has some sort of schizophrenia that also gives him terribly painful seizures. And the police catch him, or when the police catch him, he has had one of these massive seizures. It's knocked him unconscious. It's put him into a coma. And, you know, we learned that his first seizure was when he was getting baptized in the river by his abusive father. And that's definitely where this all sort of fused together, thinking that he's
the
dying.
Kink, the fear, the seizure disorder, and yeah. Possibly the schizophrenia.
Yeah, the weird religious connection to it all, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the origin story of all of it, is him thinking that he's drowning and dying while being baptized by his abusive father.
Yes, and so everything he does is automated. So he's got a fresh girl kidnapped, and I don't know what the time is, but she's got 8 hours to live.
Yeah.
And they have to get in his brain and can convince him to tell them where she is so they can save her.
Oh, yeah, we skipped over all that. Yeah, that's right. There is a ticking clock where another girl will die if we don't figure out where he's hiding.
Yes. And what I love most about the premise of this movie is that, contrary to what the typical formula is for true crime, or not true crime, but to the true crime-esque fiction, is that it is about the manhunt. It is about finding this asshole. And normally they're simultaneously, like, the killer leaving this mess of bodies behind him and doing creepier and creepier things and them trying to narrow in on who he is.
Yeah.
This movie, they just serve him up in the first 15 minutes.
It's great.
They catch him and you're just like, whoa.
That was fast.
Whoa. They pull the rug, right? Because you're just like, whoa, this guy's so twisted. I wonder what he's going to get up to. And you're like, oh, this is the end. This is the end of the road for him.
Yeah, but they can't interrogate him because he is gone forever. Pruitt Taylor Vince, the one doctor who knows all about this type of schizophrenia. He's like, he's gone, man. He's gone. If only, like, there's nothing we can do. Not even, wait a minute. You know, he sort of steers them over to Jennifer Lopez and the crew.
That, I will say, is the weakest part of this movie.
Nah.
Is it all of the exposition is just, like, on the nose. Like, poor, is it Dylan Baker who's the head of, like, the lab room where they do the head swap?
Uh-huh.
He is just pure exposition.
The dad from the
He's like, oh, we have... Yeah. We have a third setup, but we don't use it.
We never use it. We're definitely never going to use it either. Not even with you, detective.
Oh, and this won't happen, but if she forgets that she's yeah. not in her real body, she might die in real life.
I know. I love the compete, like, because again, this is the year 2000. Like, there is a scene in this movie where Jennifer Lopez is smoking a joint, watching Fantastic Planet, hanging out in front of her, like, you know, blue-backed MacBook computer. Remember those things? They were the size of televisions.
The jelly ones? They
yeah,
were so cool.
But you could carry them anywhere, you know, and you could pick your color. Whatever. But that, yeah, that really puts a timestamp on it. And then, like, Dylan Baker and everybody in the facility, you know, they're watching the computer screen and it's just like, host, guest, like, who's in control? Like, oh no, it's happening! We never planned for this! You've got to go in, you son of a bitch! Yeah, it's...
If you think of this like a Magic School Bus episode...
Kind of is, right?
It is. Like,
it is
she's
the
gone,
most fucked up Magic School Bus.
She's gone into his ear in her little spaceship, and she's just poking around in there, trying to find out where this woman is.
But instead of seeing, like, yellow blood cells, instead of seeing white blood cells and, like, I don't know... beta carotene or something.
She's at an immersive exhibit of the Met.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the most fucked up shit you've ever seen. Because, yeah, like, every time we go into these, like, scenes and these vignettes, these rooms that he's created, like, different aspects of his personality and his memory, they are so fucking stylized.
Yeah. And it's great because he's got schizophrenia. So I'm sure this is similar in most of the, like, the brains that she goes into, that there are different versions of themselves. But
yeah.
He's got this, like, king that's living there who's living in opulence. And then there's all these corners of squalor.
Yes.
There's, like, back alleys on the back alleys.
Yeah. And, like, there are different aspects of his personality. So, like, we see multiple versions of himself. Like, when she interacts with Vincent D'Onofrio, as we know him in the real world, it's kind of like we're in a vignette of a memory, mm-hmm. where she can talk to him and he explains, like, oh, this
She's
is
She's like
first
talking to Tom Riddle in Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah. That's exactly.
He is definitely a more like naive version of him, though. Like, I wouldn't call him present day. He's like first kill Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yes.
Like, he's still a little
bit. He's that memory.
He's still a little safe to be around, as much as you can say that for somebody who's just starting their serial killer career.
Actually, the best way to describe it maybe is that these are all individual like snow globes. Like, just, like, capsules and
the film does use snow globes.
It does use snow globes. Okay, so maybe that's where I'm pulling that from. Sorry. When you first started, I thought you were like, well, he's, you know, if you think about it, he's actually, I'm like, fuck, is she going to say something about, like, he's a Slytherin or something?
Are you going to say Tom Riddle
again? Is this just going to be more Harry Potter shit? Like, I'm, like, once you give one reference, I'm like, okay. And my hope is that you just don't take us down that road more.
My thing, though,
like,
is
when
that...
you think about it, this is really kind of like the Goblet of Fire.
We watched them all recently, so I feel like you know some of them, and I gotta capitalize on that while
before
you know,
I forget.
Well, you know them.
Like, the hourglass is running out on my Harry Potter references.
Yeah, like, do you remember what a basilisk is?
It's like a snake.
Good.
Thank you. Can I get a gold star now?
No.
Okay. Yeah. But so one of the other aspects of his personality is him as a little boy, and you know, of course, that's who Jennifer Lopez is going to, at least her character is going to seek out, because that's who she's definitely more familiar
Jennifer
with.
Jennifer Lopez personally.
Yeah. Because that's just, she, you know, she's a child psychologist. Like, that's just like what she's more comfortable dealing with.
I can help inner child.
But she
inner children.
She does explain that this, that his mind essentially sends the boy out as sort of like recon, to do recon, to see who this person is, because there is, like, his mind does recognize her as like a threat. Like, what the fuck are you doing here?
You don't belong here.
Yeah. And like, the first time she has to sort of pull out of his head is when she meets that giant god king character
with the cape.
With the cool cape. I'm going to say
it is a fucking cool cape.
I don't give a fuck if it looks like a screensaver from Windows XP. I love that cape.
It is a room expansive cape.
Yeah.
The cape work in this movie, so good.
Well, see, there is a legit practical cape at the end of the movie that is just mwah.
It's like shingles on a roof.
Yeah, no, he looks like a giant peacock that's been turned into like a goblin monster.
He's always wearing a good cape. A
lot of good cape work. Yeah.
Great capes. That's part of the reason why I'm so pissed at this movie for not having great ratings, because if this movie came out today, if this was a 2025 film, it would be an Oscar sweep.
Yes.
Jennifer Lopez, Vincent D'Onofrio, fucking even Vince Vaughn, throw him in there. Costumes, fucking set design, production design.
Yeah, I don't even think you have to change anything.
Director.
It is
sweet.
This movie is punching above its weight class for sure.
Oh, like, man,
they swung for the fences. I think it's a fucking home run. It looks incredible
for this to be his feature debut. Tarsem
was it
Singh,
his feature debut?
His feature debut.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's so ballsy.
I don't get
so
that.
Creative.
I'm like literally looking. I'm confirming this because I just don't believe you.
So he came from music videos, which you can kind of you can kind of really see in the visualization. Like, music videos do have a kind of a creative liberty to not necessarily be always plot driven.
Yeah.
So they do a lot of visuals and moods and stuff, and you can see that a lot in the Dreamland. But the fact that he got Vincent D'Onofrio, Jennifer Lopez, who was blowing up, I don't know what Vince Vaughn's career was doing, but he's been a household name
for a
while.
He's doing all right. I mean, Swingers, Psycho, you know, everybody loves Psycho.
Everybody loves Psycho. Yeah. Crazy. These are household names.
Yeah. Genuinely. One of
Jennifer Lopez was the biggest star ever at this
point.
Well,
I think so. You know, we were watching some of the special features like before we started watching the movie, and he was saying that they had signed Jennifer Lopez. Like, they had started filming right when she was blowing up. So, you know, people were like, so, you know, excited that they had cast Jennifer Lopez, like the movie executives, but they were very happy about it once they started filming, because
he probably took advantage of that too, because suddenly a film that was maybe like, you know, 16 down on their release list became like number 2 or 3
huge when it came out.
Yeah, like, I can't believe my parents watched a movie like this.
It's because Jennifer Lopez was in it.
Exactly.
They probably didn't care too much about Vincent D'Onofrio. Meanwhile, you are just like, is that that guy who plays Thor in Adventures in Babysitting?
He was my first crush.
And what did you think of Creepy Vincent D'Onofrio here? Because I think, honestly,
I'm kind of still aboard.
Maybe like top three performances of him ever.
His best performance. It's his best.
You think so?
Yeah.
You've seen all of his stuff?
Yeah.
You've watched all
every single
18
one.
Seasons of Law and Order, SVU?
What? Is he in that?
Or Criminal Intent? I can't remember which one he's in.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Yeah, we got to get you. Have you seen Full Metal Jacket?
Maybe. I don't know.
You've probably seen
probably
it,
not.
Yeah.
Is he a serial killer?
No. One could make an argument. No, he's only, it's a spoiler to say how much of the movie he's in.
Give this man an Oscar.
Yeah, no, retroactively, let's go back and
give
him an Oscar.
Give the cell all the Oscars.
I got to tell you too, like if you were a big fan of Nicolas Cage in Long Legs, you got to go back and check out The Cell, because Vincent D'Onofrio is doing a very similar thing where he has this sort of like soft voice.
Slightly effeminate, but he's definitely self-censoring because we see this in the flashbacks in Vincent D'Onofrio's character's brain that his dad was... He definitely beat out of him.
Yeah.
He fucking took an iron to him because he was like ironing dolls' clothes.
Yeah. He's playing with dolls. And then later on as an adult, he essentially turned women into dolls. Like he takes these corpses and they become his playthings.
Yeah. Well, and also mom left. So
mom
like,
left. Yeah.
Dolls don't leave.
And yeah, like at some point he dollifies in a way Jennifer Lopez by making a collar for her, which is just like a great visual moment. Like you think, okay cool, yeah, like he's got a weird serial killer thing. He makes collars for these corpses.
But somebody putting a collar on you in their brain,
yeah,
that would fuck you up so bad mentally. Well, like I don't think they linger there enough, because they're all of a sudden they're like, oh, we've lost her.
Well, I mean, yeah, she thinks that she's in the real world, and like she's kind of at his disposal. Like she's on board with everything as though this is also part of her reality and it's something that she lives in. And like, cause she's giddy when he sort of like kidnaps Vince Vaughn and strings him up for torture. Like she's...
Yeah, there's
she's,
two Vincents.
It was a slip of the tongue.
Can you imagine set though? You're just like, Vince,
It's... Are you kidding me? It's Vince and Mr. D'Onofrio. There's no question.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
One of the best scenes, though, visually, too, is when we see all of those dolls. Because, like, you hear about him having this body count. We only really see him, like, his process with his most recent victim. But when we're in his mind, before we're going into his memories, we're seeing the, like, this museum exhibit of all the women
all,
that he's killed.
They've all been marionette-ified.
Yeah.
Like, they're still corpses in his head, and they've been posed and... automatoned into different characters. There's a woman like hauling a chariot that I think is the most fucked up visual.
Yeah.
There's a ballerina.
Ballerina's good. There's another woman with a bunch of like ducks, right? Is that what it is?
Maybe.
Or swans or something. They're all very weird. There's also like a bodybuilder in there.
Yeah. So
was she a spy? Like she's not one of the corpses, right?
No, I think she's just like a guard.
Yeah. Okay.
But this scene, and I probably said this in the last recording we did, but this scene always merges in my mind with the stairway to the basement in the 13 Ghosts remake.
Oh, sure.
When they, especially too, because the girl is walking down with her handheld camcorder and we're seeing this like frosted glass with like creepy shit within it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same universe in my head. They just reused the set.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I can understand why people like, and like... This sequence is incredibly stylized, and it's kind of our introduction to the world. So like they're going hard real fast as soon as we get in there. We're not lingering too much in what the memories looked like in the real world. It's all as stylized as it possibly could be in his mind. It's very music video-y. It's very 2000s. It's almost like they invented contrast this year. But when people talk, when I hear
Are
people...
Are you being rude about Vincent D'Onofrio's brain right now?
But like when I hear people complain about the look of the movie, I just like, I'm like, you're just wrong.
Like, I was like, you're wrong.
Yeah. Like, no, you're incorrect. You're absolutely right. This is a time capsule. This is very of the moment, but you're wrong. Like the way that, you know, grimy 80s movies have a film grain to them. And we're all just like, mwah, love trash, love cinema. Like we have to take the same appreciation for the early 2000s look.
We're getting there, John. You just got to wait because we're in like nine. Well, actually, we just hit Y2K. UK stuff. Everybody's doing like slap bracelets, neon. And
yeah, that's true.
So, we went to go see
the Beetlejuice musical and they were handing out slap bracelets. And I'm like, thank you very much. I will take one of those for sure. Even though my dog hates them. I don't know why. We got a dog at home. Every time I put this slap bracelet on, he thinks that I'm declaring war. And he goes nuts.
Yeah, but he's also afraid of cameras. So.
You know why? He's too young. He's got no appreciation for the early 2000s and the late 90s when slap bracelets were a thing. And he's over here poo-pooing things like the cell.
Just wait till you bring a slinky home.
Yeah, he's going to love that. What is it? Is it just that it's like people... Because it's not like the whole movie looks like poorly rendered CGI.
Not the whole movie.
Oh, that hurt.
Okay.
Oh, God.
So the sequence, like you mentioned like a Windows XP screensaver, and uh-huh. I will raise you the sequence when Vince Vaughn goes into Vincent D'Onofrio's brain yeah. after we've lost Jennifer Lopez.
Where the movie
and we're
kicks
seeing
it up a notch
all
and it gets
of the
even
synapses fire in digital 3D.
Okay, yeah. It's like a it's like a new millennial version of the 2001 A Space Odyssey sequence. I hear
when it ended, I was like, has everyone recovered from their grand mal?
Yeah, it looks a lot like Virtuosity. It looks a lot like The Lawnmower Man.
I love it though. Like I'm knocking it, but I'm knocking it from a place of love.
We were so brave to take such steps forward without looking beyond the front door. Like they really went hard. I'm sure if they could have made it look better, they would have made it look better. But like I didn't come here to see poorly rendered blood. You know, like I came here for everything else about the movie that looks great.
My favorite shot of the film, and you might have the same one, uh-huh. My absolute favorite moment of the film, I can't even remember when it occurs, because this is just like this is an assault of visuals, mm-hmm. is the rotating camera.
Fuck yeah.
When we're going through the baptism, and
hell
we come
yeah.
out of the water, go over and around this really rustic, you know,
somewhere in the south,
grassroots like, yeah. church, like it's like eight people mm-hmm. in a pond, dunking this kid's fucking drowning, and we go back in the water.
We trail down the leg, up to the foot, the riverbed, out into a sewer.
And then we're just in different spaces. Like at one point, we're following his leg, and then the bottom, the ground is the top, the ceiling, and
yep.
he's in an acrylic box, and we're moving on. And yep. you're like, wait a minute, I have to catch up. Like my brain has to catch up with what my eyes are seeing.
Uh-huh, yeah. And then Jennifer Lopez is essentially just like floating weightlessly in the air. And she's into his brain and she's got to figure out where to go. Yeah, it's nuts. It's just like an image that we see that we later find some connective tissue for, where he's explaining where he had his first seizure and where this all maybe comes from. But yeah, that's truly the best camera work of the entire
so
fucking movie.
So good. So good. Oh, also the horse. We have to talk about the horse.
Okay, sure. Let's talk
about... And that's CGI stuff.
Let's talk about the horse. This is a great idea. I love this. And then after that, I want to talk about something that I think is bad. I think I owe it at this
you
point.
You have a thing is bad?
I think I owe it at this point to say that there's something that they do digitally that I think is maybe just a little silly.
But the cape is fine.
The cape is the... I love
it. It's
cape.
A great cape.
It's in the trailers. It's the thing that I was always like, I gotta see that fucking movie. What's up with that cape and that weird guy?
How do you... In 10 seconds or less, convey that a man is God.
Yeah.
A wall of cape.
Big old cape. The walls are drapes, and then when you stand up and move, the drapes come with you. Like, that's brilliant. Because also, he never gets out of that seat. That's the idea. He would never leave that seat, because now he's just, like, dragging the whole room with him. It has to be really fucking important
but
if he's going to stand.
But it's also his world. Like, the construct, it's his body.
Yeah.
Everything here is his body.
God, I love this movie.
It's good. Yeah. The visual of the horse.
Yes.
It's such a great introduction to this world, because she's using it as kind of a bonding tool. She's like, oh, look, a horse. Let's,
you mean, this
let's
little boy,
child
let's
psychology up this room. And then the kid's like, wait a minute. You're going to get sliced into 36 pieces.
Yeah, so above we see a bunch of panes of glass suspended and a clock that's counting down. He pushes her out of the way to save her. This is the save the cat moment in the movie. Right before we kill, after we've killed a 20-year-old girl, and right before we kill a fictional horse, and it splits the horse into 8 pieces. It extends outwards so that way, like, The horse is cut into
a horse accordion.
It's like cut into 6-inch slices, so you could see every section of the horse from front to back, and all of the organs are still working and pulsating. And then Jennifer Lopez just walks past it like it's fucking nothing. You know, like it was just a totally normal thing that she sees every day inside the minds of comatose children.
She has balls of steel in the other verse.
I would be out right there. Like they explain how they've got this like implant that they put in her hands. They do not need an implant.
No,
because
it's all,
it doesn't matter.
Is it for like? Is it a placebo effect so that she always knows it's there?
Well, it's supposed to be a signal that they know to start yanking them out, to like start putting in different chemicals to turn off the connection. And then we know that because in the real world, she'll raise her hands and press the button, and then they know to start doing stuff. They even implant one in Vince Vaughn so that way he can escape too. But like, the fact that she raises her hands and does something should just be enough.
Yeah.
It's redundant.
Well, but anyway, she's doing it in the headspace. Whatever.
If it didn't look so fucking cool, once that horse got like cut up into 8 pieces, I'd be the fuck out of there. I'd be pressing that button right away.
Oh, yeah. And she even goes to the point where she's like confronting him while he's cutting up his first kill. And she's still being like calm and quiet.
Well, there are insert shots of her getting close to the button. Like,
yeah.
It's like she's got her hand
but
near
she's
a gun.
She's still entertaining this serial killer in different forms.
She wants to save this other girl.
She's doing
right?
a great
like, there's,
job.
There's something, you know, at stake here.
She's very professional.
The crazy thing about it is that we do see, like, they're like, hey, you're not having really fucked up dreams because of all this stuff you're doing with these
she's
kids,
like,
right?
No.
Like, no, totally not. No. No. But, like, we see that her dreams are essentially, like, the same world that she's entering when she goes to do this therapy session with these kids. I'd hate to find out what the fuck she's bringing home after being in this guy's head for 10 minutes.
Yeah, true.
Now, we have a couple copies of this movie, and you can watch a lot of behind-the-scenes featurettes. There's a DVD commentary with the director, and he talked about killing that horse being a bridge too far for America. Turns out, like, oh, yeah, people love dogs and stuff, and, like, you'd never kill a dog. Would you kill a horse? And suddenly, you lose the entire audience. Apparently, that was a deal-breaker for a lot of people at test screenings.
Wow. There are a lot of things about this movie that I'm like, holy shit, they fucking did this.
Yeah.
Even just the fact that Jennifer Lopez's character is sympathetic to the serial killer.
Yeah.
She's sympathetic to mostly the child version of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's also a version of him that is and becomes that serial killer.
So that's what's really good about the end of the movie. And like the end of the movie is a little silly because they're having like a heart to heart where she's got this sort of Mother Teresa look to her. Like she goes back in, she gets him to enter her mind rather than him. Sorry. Him enter her mind rather than her entering his mind, so that way she can sort of like create the sandbox and control the world.
And this is
bit.
Where the snow globe comes in because she's basically made a compartment for him,
yeah,
so that he can't just run free in her brain because that would be probably catastrophic.
Which they definitely don't talk about, but is probably the next step for the experiment.
I think that is an advancement in the therapy.
Yeah.
Like, I think she's going to use this now. She knows, like, oh, I can just create a safe snow globe space.
Yeah.
That is tailor-made for each patient.
Exactly. So rather than, because at the beginning of the movie, they're talking about how there's not a whole lot of like progress happening, you know, for like a year and a half. She's been working with this kid and they haven't seen any sort of development.
You know what's funny? I can't remember any character's name in this movie, but I know that kid is named Edward.
Yeah. So his name, they call him Mr. E, which is funny because it's a mystery.
Oh.
I think. I don't know. Yeah. And like he's got a boogeyman character. Like I think he had some traumatic event during a boating accident. But yeah, like, and they don't talk about it at the end of the movie, that this is actually the breakthrough that they needed, was that you get the comatose patient to enter the therapist's mind, and that's where you sort of have, like, this this like working stage, like you're working on a website or you're putting a computer into safe mode. And she brings him in and then they start talking and, you know, she's being a little more soft with him. I do hate, this is the one thing I don't really like, all the ivy and the flowers and plants and stuff
growing on the border of the screen.
Yeah, on the screen. And like it stays there. And so like when we cut to different characters, you that's
know,
all there.
You know why it is though?
Why?
It's because we're in a prayer card.
Oh,
because
yeah.
She, before she goes in, she looks at a snow globe and she looks at a prayer card of Mother Teresa, and the card has the borders.
So
we're not in a real space. We're in that's a card. It's like 2D in that moment.
I appreciate it, you know, but it's just, I just don't love it. And maybe it's because it's so soft and nice compared to the rest of the movie. And I'm like, man, I came here for serial killer shit. but like in the end of the movie, that's where she also, where, you know, her especially, she has to deal with the fact that this little boy is this serial killer, is this monster, is this little boy. You know, like he is all of those things.
Yeah, because every time she goes to stab the big bad guy, the little boy is also bleeding.
Yeah, exactly.
And she's like, shit.
She's like, I can't kill him because if I kill him, I kill the little boy. And I think Vincent D'Onofrio sums it up really well as like his giant snake monster self at the end of the movie, where he says, me have boy. And that's the man we want to have an Oscar for this movie. Me have boy.
It's pretty good.
It actually works out really
well.
It's
pretty great.
Yeah, it is good because like, yeah, she hates what he's become. But to kill him is to also kill this little boy. Like it's a bit, there's a bit of a redemption there, which is crazy because you would never expect that from how the beginning of the movie is, you know, like this is,
yeah, well, because she's just like, you're not fixable.
Yeah.
Puts a pillow over his face.
Pretty much. Like, we don't even need to fix him. Like, we know that he's never coming out of this coma. It doesn't matter. Like, it's physically impossible.
Mm-hmm.
He's locked in there. We just need to know where this girl is. And so she doesn't really have to do anything to repair him. She's just going in to grab information. And we spend so much time at the beginning painting him as a actual monster. Like a real world monster, and then a fantasy world monster, and to expect that we would have this arc at the end of the movie where you kind of forgive him, and because it's not 100% his fault that he became the thing that he is really surprising.
Yeah, it is lovely that they do tackle like horrible people do horrible things, but they've also had horrible things done to them.
Yeah.
Like, and that not everything is completely black and white. I mean, he's a serial killer. He's terrible. He needs to be locked up because he can't help himself.
Yeah, exactly.
But that doesn't mean he should live a life without empathy.
It's crazy.
Like, without empathy being bestowed upon him. Like, that's probably the first time anybody's been like, oh, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, exactly, right? And, like, you would never expect
only if somebody had said that before he killed his first victim. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. And, guys, this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Just use you know, just use the offer code.
I have boy.
Oh God, yeah. So this movie's an A+, man.
It's so good.
Yeah, I
get excited every single time we watch this movie, and I can't believe this is only the second time we've covered it on the podcast. I feel like every 2 years we're like, delete it so we can do it again.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm constantly recommending it to people, and like throughout this episode, I have just been thinking of other movies. Like, oh, if you like Long Legs, you got to check this movie out. If you like RRR, you got to check this movie out. Like, legit though, if you like Labyrinth or you like Mirror Mask, you got to check out the Cell.
Yeah, if you like 13 Ghosts when they go in the basement, you'll like The Cell.
If you like that weird hunky car repairman from Adventures in Babysitting,
are you ever gonna leave me alone on that one?
He's a hunk. Yeah, no, honestly, like if you I hope we're preaching to the converted here. Like, I hope that most of the people listening there's like, yeah, we fucking get it, The Cell rocks. But yeah, if you have been putting it off, if you haven't seen it, now's your opportunity. And it's definitely easier to find than ever before because Arrow Video just put out a 4K. It looks great. There's like a new feature-length interview.
This episode was brought to you by BetterHelp and Arrow Video.
Yeah, no one paid us to say any of this shit, but like legitimately, like check out that Arrow Video disc because the movie looks incredible. You've got a brand new interview from 2024 with Tarsem.
So good. One of my favorite moments is when he's like, yo, you guys, Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men is Vincent D'Onofrio.
He's like, you fucking stole. Like that
look
guy
at that haircut. Look at that haircut. Yeah. And we're like, yes.
Like it's an hour and a half
drag
interview.
That.
And all he does is talk about The Cell.
And he's barefoot.
He's a fascinating
guy. I love him.
Yeah. Like, no, truly, check out the DVD commentaries. Check out the interviews. There's an alternate version. There's a second disc that comes with that box set. It's an alternate version of the movie with a new scan and completely different color grading. I forgot to tell you that it turns out the theatrical release of this movie does not have the masturbation sequence.
It doesn't?
No, where he strings himself up and jerks off onto the corpse.
So what does he do? Just take her out of the
milk bath? They just don't have that. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, fuck.
And I think he just, like, he's over top of her naked.
We all know what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. But they cut it out. And it's in the director's cut. In America. Now, in Canada, I don't think that we ever had it cut. Because we don't have, like, this is why I grabbed the DVD, like, the old-ass scratched-up DVD that we have on the shelf, because I wanted to see if it was some sort of collector's edition with the director's cut. It's not. Hmm. But this definitely has, like, guys, come to Canada. We got the masturbation cut. We got healthcare. We got the masturbation
cut. I love that the fucking MPAA is afraid of fucking sex, but murder and all of the other grotesque shit, the vivisection of the horse, yeah. All good. But if he touches his own penis.
Yeah, right? Like, you could show all of the Black Dahlia crime scene photos, but if anybody gets turned on, that's it. So yeah, this is a 4 out of 4 for me. I fucking love this
movie.
Yeah,
4 out of fucking 4.
Yeah.
Retroactive Oscars for all.
Even if I don't love the prayer card visual, like, I get what they're going for. I love the swing. It's just like, yeah, you know.
You can just turn off the movie before she goes in.
Yeah,
like
I could.
They find the girl. It's all like, woo, we're happy.
And everyone had a happy end. You know, there are a handful of movies. My mom used to do that too when I was younger, and I never knew for years. Like, one day I like watched The Firm. For some dumb reason, as a kid, I liked watching The Firm. And my mom, like, there's a scene halfway through the movie where he graduates and he's like second in his class. And then the rest of the movie is like all the crime, all the thriller, all like the cool dark shit. And my mom, she was like, he worked that hard and he still wasn't the smartest person. Turned the movie off.
She turns off Goodfellas right after they have that successful heist. Yeah. Before they start killing all their guys.
And they, like, all split the money.
And they all got fur coats and pink Cadillacs. The end.
There are so many movies my mom did that for. And I was just like, yeah, okay, that was a good movie. I'm going to go have a snack and I'm going to go outside.
You guys ever seen those movies that are 26 minutes long? Hey?
Yeah, that was me.
You at the fucking at recess?
Yep, that was it.
He just graduates college. It's great.
No idea why I love that movie, but like, I do know why I love The Cell, and it's because it's a goddamn masterpiece.
Okay, quick question before we outro. Do you like The Cell or Silence of the Lambs more?
Fuck.
That's hard.
I know. I just watched The Cell. that's the other problem. I just watched
I'm
The
only
Cell.
Asking because I can't answer that question.
I mean,
The Cell is so good.
The Cell feels like it's more my type of movie.
Yes. But The Cell wouldn't exist without Silence of the Lambs.
I don't
but
think
also,
so, yeah.
They did something in that space when you thought that space couldn't be touched again.
Exactly, yeah. And if you've been saying the same thing about some other crime thrillers that have come out recently.
They've been saying that about crime thrillers since there was one crime thriller.
That's because there is only one kind of crime thriller, and everyone that comes out, you're like, they're doing something new.
It's Manhunter.
Basically, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. No, The Cell, I think if I had to choose only one that I could watch again, ever, it's The Cell.
Yeah. For watchability choice, I agree with you.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I think Vincent D'Onofrio is as good as Anthony Hopkins. It is a much subtler performance. Anthony Hopkins is clearly doing something special in that movie. Everybody in that movie is great. But yeah, The Cell definitely win in the arm wrestling competition with Silence of the Lambs in my mind.
So good. Such a good movie. I'm happy we revisited.
And so, Kim, why did we talk about this movie today?
Well, I can't tell you that because the theme for this season is secret.
That's right. If you have any idea of what the secret theme for this season of Nightmare on Film Street is, check out the link in the episode description. First person to get it right wins a Nightmare on Film Street prize pack. And if a bunch of people get it right, we're going to, you know, we'll give away some t-shirts or something. Like, we'll have prizes. We'll pull some names out of some hats.
Oh, yeah. Like, all season long, you have a chance to guess, and we'll draw at the end of the season.
Yeah. So, yeah, take a look back at some of the other movies that we've talked about. Pull out the red yarn, start putting the boards together, figure out what the secret theme is for this season, and we wish you the best of luck.
That's it from us this week. Until next episode, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Do you like horror movies? Do you like cocktails? Do you like cocktails while you watch horror movies?
Oh boy, do we have a surprise for you. Cocktails from the Crypt is finally here. You can get a copy of our new recipe book, 60 Terrifying Concoctions, inspired by your favorite horror movies, right now, wherever books are sold.
Learn how to make the Drag Mai Tai to Hell, the Negroni Nomicon.
Surprise your friends with a Jason X-inspired slushy.
Get sloshed drinking a Texas Chainsaw Margarita, or six.
And why not blow your brains at the back of your head with the Killbot Kamikaze? Thank you. Have a nice day.
You can learn how to drink. You can learn how to make these drinks and more in Cocktails from the Crypt, available wherever books are sold, like Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, this infomercial bit has been really fun, but seriously, one, thank you so much to everybody who has pre-ordered a copy of Cocktails from the Crypt. And if you are looking for a gift for the horror person in your life and you have no idea what else to get them, Cocktails from the Crypt is here to help them punch up every Friday movie night and turn it into a graveyard smash.
Plus, the cover's embossed and it looks great on your coffee table.
No, oh, Kim's still stuck in infomercial land, guys. I'm sorry. I think she's gone forever.
It's purple.
You can get Cocktails from the Crypt right now, wherever books are sold. Or you can head over to nofspodcast.com/go. There's links for everything.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.